Warning, the following broadcast is offensive, marginally funny, and contains no education value whatsoever. It is intended for immature audiences only. It's the White Riot Show. Listen in as Big Fat John and Judo Larry M. talk about whatever they damn well want to talk about. So, turn up the volume, clean the shit out of your ears, and get ready to be entertained. Because we're ready to riot right now.
That's right, it's the White Riot Show, coming to you live from the spacious White Riot Studios in Brooklyn, New York. This is one of your hosts, Big Fat John.
And Judo Larry M.
And Judo Larry M, we're back again after the... And I have to admit, before I go any further...
Yes.
I thought last week's show was one of the best, and I'm even debating how we could possibly even top what we did last week.
The only way you can top what we did last week is if you had a surgery that was even funnier than the one that I...
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not heard last week's episode, or even if you want to hear quite possibly the seven funniest minutes in the history of radio, go check out the Riotous Clips on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/White Riot Show. Check out the Riotous Clips. The most recent one entitled... Judo Larry M. had a surgery.
Had surgery.
It's one of the funniest things you'll ever hear. I was laughing hard during last week's episode. I laughed hard all week as people told me they thought it was the funniest clip ever. So hats off to Judo Larry M. on the funny recounting of a serious medical condition.
Yes. And let me tell you, I don't think it's braggadocious to say that it is 7 minutes and 24 seconds of pure comedic heaven.
It was awesome.
I was just listening. I was like, yeah. This really is just...
It was fantastic. Let me just tell you that. It was hilarious. And you know what the ironic... So let me just tell the people.
And it's free.
Last week, it was... you were telling us about having a skin tag removed from your asshole.
My hemorrhoidal tag.
Yeah, from your asshole.
Yes.
And you were telling us all the
funny... outer asshole.
Yes, the outer asshole. And what I'm about to say is the God's honest truth. I went home, listened to it. The next day, I'm sitting on the bowl enjoying myself a nice, long, relaxing shit. Flush, like a two-flusher.
Wow.
And then after I get done, I go to wipe my ass clean because I'm clean down there. And I start feeling something. I'm like, what the fuck is going on with my asshole? And it turns out, this is the God's honest truth, a fucking like hemorrhoid or something growing in my ass. After laughing at you for like 7 solid minutes about the problems you had with hemorrhoids.
Really?
I got myself a hemorrhoid like the next day. It's almost as if God was punishing me for laughing so hard at your hemorrhoid woes. This is the God's honest truth. And I had to go to my wife and say, do you mind getting some Prep Age and shoving it up my ass? Because I don't want to go through what Judo Larry M. did.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's so true. Now, talk so about now, yeah. Irony, Kimsit, karma, whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Good luck.
Yes, it was pretty bad. Okay, so...
did you use the Prep Age?
Yeah.
Were you able to get past the mental aspect?
Like I said, unlike you, I'm married, so I had my wife do it. For her, it was pleasurable. She's torturing me, and she loved it.
Yeah, and you loved it.
I loved it, too. I got to tell the truth.
All right, redo the pimp.
All right, so hold on. Let's get right to the pimping. Stitcher.com, look for The White Riot Show. Go to iTunes and look for The White Riot Show. Also, go to Facebook.com/White Riot Show, Twitter.com/White Riot Show. And, of course, YouTube.com/White Riot Show. Judo Larry M., anywhere you look, there we are. And we especially like for during the week between podcasts, you get your Jones of the White Riot Show. Probably the best place you could go is Twitter, because that's where you'll find me trolling horrible leftist liberals and other assholes during the week.
Yes, I know you spend a great deal of time.
Yes.
Just arguing and antagonizing
and torturing fucking liberals,
morons of the blogosphere.
Yes, absolutely. And I have an announcement to make. The White Riot Show now featured in one more venue, Player.fm. Player.fm.
Player.fm.
Yes, all new right. To the White Riot Show network, as it were. They inform me that they'll be carrying the White Riot Show. So if you're a Player.fm subscriber or listener, go to player.fm, look for the White Riot Show, and I think they've already archived the last 20 episodes or so. So they've already archived us on their site, and we welcome player.fm into the fold.
I'll have to check that out, because yes. I'm a big fan of YouTube, so I usually get it there.
Yeah, yeah. Just go around. Also, some fan art was sent into the White Riot Show a couple weeks ago.
That was very cool.
Somebody's rendition of Big Fat John and Judo Larry M at the mic. So we're using that in some of our YouTube clips when you listen to the show. Check out the new fan art. And if anybody else has any fan art, whatever your imaginations tell you Big Fat John and Judo Larry M may look like, feel free to send it in. We'll take a look at it. We'll obviously post the best ones.
Yes, fan art, not fan fart.
That too. That yes. too. But anyway, Judo Larry M, you ready to talk about some interesting topics of the week?
I am ready to go. The laugh at...
And absolutely anything. So let's start off with the obvious one.
Yeah.
Are you going to be heading off to the Vatican this week? Do you have a vote in what the new pope's going to be? Who the new pope's going to be, rather?
Oh, okay. I thought you were going for a Venezuela joke there.
No. The Vatican. Okay.
The Vatican. No, I will not be in my ongoing role as an agnostic and not giving a shit. Not waiting for the white smoke or the black smoke or whatever the Akawis send over the hills. Yeah. I just don't care.
I can't tell you how... Now, typically, unlike you, while... I'm not necessarily overly religious. I tend to be a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Friendly or
cafeteria Catholic?
Oh, I'm not a Catholic, but I mean, I'm less antagonistic towards religion than you are. But I have to tell you,
I'm not antagonistic. I just ignore it.
No, fair enough. but what I mean is, like, the last 2 weeks, I've had a good time, like, torturing fucking papal supporters. We have a good friend of ours.
Well, I'm glad you're not antagonistic.
I know I am. But these past 2 weeks especially, like, the almost reluctance to admit that this pope, and possibly John Paul II, but I don't know, but maybe. But this pope especially, that... How much of the evidence of child abuse and anally raping altar boys and shit like that, priests having illegitimate children and sex rings and homosexual orgies and all this shit taking place, how much people are willing to just assume that Pope Benedict knew nothing of it and he did his best to correct it? And it's amazing to me that even after all this, and there's an excellent documentary on HBO making the rounds recently called Maximum Mea Culpa, and that goes into it. But it's almost horrible. Like, I don't understand why a Catholic would be proud to say that they covered this up for so many years.
Yeah, I understand that. But it's not... I mean, this is one of the things I actually don't like about all religions.
Yeah.
It's not surprising to find out that people are defensive about their religion.
Right.
Everybody's like that. I mean, if I started shitting on the Greek Orthodox Church, I mean, at some point, you're going to be like, wow, this is, you know.
But not if you shat on...
Your head.
That I would enjoy. But I'm saying not if you shat on individuals. Do you know what I mean? Like in other words, I would understand the defensiveness.
Yeah, but right now you're talking about them in a very universal, general way.
No, I'm specifically talking about this pope, the ex-pope, Pope Emeritus, whatever you want to talk about. When he was Cardinal Ratzinger, he was responsible for a lot of this policing of what were reports of sexual abuse and cover-ups.
And misconduct.
And misconduct. I mean, when you look at the stuff coming out of Ireland with a lot of those priests, especially the U.S., especially.
That's a problem.
Some of the high-ranking officials within the Vatican, within the walls of the Vatican almost. Yeah. And it really is despicable where, to me at least, even if you're a practicing Catholic, why wouldn't you say the religion is good, the concepts? I'm not even discussing that. Like, I'm not debating dogma.
Why defend these people?
Yeah.
Why try to get them off? Why aren't they being turned over to the authorities?
Exactly.
Because quite honestly, they're actually not good priests.
Right.
They're not good cardinals.
That's my whole point.
They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. And in today's age, it's stupid to think that you can bury this shit. That people will keep quiet, that they won't hit the internet, that they won't attempt to file lawsuits and whatever else you want.
And then, you know, you have your people who are just, you know, they're one of the, I think, negative effects of all religions is, you know, it gets this kind of just blind loyalty from people.
Right.
So then you have the people who just won't accept it.
Right.
And they think it's just people who are not Catholic just being bigoted and going after their church.
Right.
Yeah. They're taking like such a defensive point of view that, you know, like, oh, this isn't really happening. You just don't like us.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But honestly, all religions are such a disappointment.
What I spent the last 2 weeks doing was really equating Joe Paterno and Pope Benedict. Like
they're turning a blind eye to
it. Forget about the scale. Obviously, the scale in the Catholic Church is much
more important.
There you go. But the scale in the Catholic Church being obviously the scale of the abuse being much larger, obviously, than Penn State and
potentially
and really going back far longer than Penn State. But I mean, people are willing to say, except unless you're a Penn State alum, people are willing to say Joe Paterno was basically a scumbag. That even though he wasn't guilty of sodomizing any young boys.
I'd say that language for Sandusky.
Well, Sandusky deserves to be executed, in my opinion.
And that redheaded guy who works for Paterno, he's bad too.
McQueary or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
I know, but you know, like, I don't understand that. Why? I mean, look, I'm not going to defend Joe Paterno, but why aren't people mad at this guy? Well, here's a guy who witnessed it.
Yes.
He said he saw Sandusky pushing some little kid's face up against the wall and raping him. Not only does, and he's big, this guy's like this big guy. Not only does he not go in, stop the attack.
Yeah. Like maybe, you and I would have. Yeah.
Exactly. Throw a couple of punches.
Right.
Probably yell out, what the fuck are you doing? Blah, blah.
Right.
He ignores it and he goes and tells Joe Paterno. Well, what's he going to do?
Call
the police.
I agree with you, but I find him less culpable because in the overall scheme of things, he was subordinate to Sandusky and Paterno. Do you understand what I'm saying?
You're talking about the structure of a school.
No. I understand.
This is a violent crime. Your responsibility is to help that kid and to call
the
police.
I agree.
You can tell Joe Paterno, an old football coach. You can tell him later.
No, I don't disagree with you, but I find it's understandable to me, just like in the Army, if a corporal and a captain both witness a colonel committing a crime. Yes, both of them have a duty to report it, but I think most people would hold the officer more culpable.
Yeah, but that's the military.
No, but I'm saying
it's like college football.
I understand,
program.
But if you kind of look at it in the sense that one was an assistant coach, the other one was a player.
Look at it this way. Okay, fine. Let's say that that's true. Okay, so he goes and tells Joe Paterno. All right, and Joe Paterno doesn't do anything.
Right.
Okay. This guy with the red hair, doesn't he still have a responsibility to pursue it? And doesn't he tell the police?
Yeah, except that I'm not defending him, but I think what his plan was, he was told that it was handled.
Oh.
You know?
I didn't hear that.
Besides, Paterno's position at that university.
And he was really, like God.
He was like the Pope. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. The athletic director, honestly, had no power before him. The school president really practically bowed before Paterno. So I mean,
they all kissed his ass.
So that's why I equated. But for Benedict, for people who told me, and like I said, a very good friend of ours that you and I both know. Again, I won't mention his name, but defender of the Catholic faith, and he came to me and said, "Why are you so anti-Pope Benedict? He did so much. He changed the rules. He changed the canon law to allow for this sort of thing." And I'm like, "All you're telling me is that he changed the system to hide these guys as long as possible. Move them from parish to parish, take them away from children." But at the end of the day, he never had them arrested. He never moved them.
He just changed things on the books.
Exactly.
You know, in other words, you know what it is? It's like what we talked about with hate crime laws.
Yeah.
It's kind of meaningless because these are, first of all, the law's already on the books.
Yeah.
And if you're really not going to enforce them or do it, you know, it's just kind of a stupid extra.
Yes.
So what he really did is he just changed some of them. Oh, okay. So here's the official language. If we catch you butt fucking somebody, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. But then if you really don't pursue it and you don't turn them over to the police.
Well, they send them to a monastery or some shit.
What does that do?
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at.
It's a jerk off.
Right. So in the people of the ardent defenders of the Pope, they'll say, well, he put in the rule that says like these sex offenders have to go to a monastery, live out their lives in prayer and penance. And I'm like,
Jesus Christ.
What does that amount to?
What does that do?
Right. These people should be arrested and put in jail.
I don't know why
they're beyond the scope of the law, to be honest with you. I don't know why the police don't go and arrest them. I don't care if they're priests or popes or cardinals or whatever.
That's a bad reason to let people
like
get
theoretically
away with
the Pope has immunity, which I read an interesting thing because he's technically the head of state. The Vatican is considered its own nation.
It is.
Right. So
not
the,
considered.
It is.
It is. It's not part of Italy.
So the Pope as head of state has a certain amount of diplomatic immunity. You can't sue him, you can't do anything. And there's actually a good question now saying, can he now be sued in U.S. courts considering he's no longer the head of the Vatican?
Right.
So I think there's two or three people that are interested in it, but we'll see how it turns out. But anyway.
That's like the people at The Hague who wanted to bring up Bush and Cheney.
Right, exactly.
It's not going to happen.
So it has very legal, very
tenuous
legal standing. Right. But it's interesting to me, but again, what do you make about all these rumors that they want an Asian pope or a black pope or an American pope this time around? Or do you think they're going to go safe and just put in an Italian guy?
I don't know that that's really going to change the problem we're talking about.
Yeah.
As far as Asian, black, well, all that would show is that they're to some degree succumbing to pressure,
right?
Because yet another white guy might be annoying. The
right.
majority of the Catholic Church right now actually is not white.
Correct.
It is Hispanic and like some other things.
Right.
So I think there's actually some value in that.
Right.
But it has to be because look, if you're religious, this is a serious business. So it has to be for the right reasons. It can't be, you know, like hope and change asshole
right.
that people voted for because
right.
they really thought he was different.
Right.
And it was going to be, oh, it's wonderful and he's black.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. This is supposed to be God. It's supposed to be
right.
something very serious. I don't mind if the Pope is, obviously it doesn't affect me because I don't follow it. But if he's a minority, if he's somebody who's not white, that's, you know what, that's fine.
Right.
But as long as it's, they come to that by like a serious conclusion. In other words, don't pick him just because he's... I don't know what that does for you.
Right. I don't think those cardinals necessarily bend to political correctness or anything, but it's just curious to me that...
you'd be surprised.
They might, but I think it's more political. You know, like Dolan, a lot of people seem to like, but they can't get over the fact, A, that he's young, and B, that he's a jokester. That he's a backslapper, I should say.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's interesting to see who they're going to pick. I mean, they picked Ratzinger the first time around because they wanted somebody old after like an almost 30-year reign from Pope John Paul II.
Yeah.
They wanted somebody old who wouldn't be there. They thought he was going to die after 5-10 years tops. Yeah. And you see now that he's retiring, of course, which I think is also problematic. Unless they hide the guy
it's
been 600 years, yeah.
So it's... It's interesting because you know what the thing is, since it never happens as
yeah.
a rule,
yeah,
then it looks suspicious.
It really does.
That's the problem here. He may have actually retired for totally legitimate reasons for all
right.
I know. He might have just been, I'm old, I'm tired.
I'm getting Alzheimer's.
But yeah, let them pick some old, them pick some young whippersnapper. Like, not to make fun of him, but the last couple of years that John Paul was in, he was shaking.
He was almost unable to talk at the end.
But in other words, he might be looking at it, seriously, we don't know. This Ratzinger, he might be looking at it like, well, the doctors told me that that's going to be me in a year.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be doing that. So let them get some.
But at the same time, don't you think he would have just locked himself away and once every 6 months some cardinal?
What is that, though? Then you really have no leadership, and you probably
You would have all those other cardinals that would be running a shadow Vatican, basically.
Nah.
But I mean,
he's German; they're big into leadership.
I also think it sort of may rock the faith of some Catholics because to them the Pope is there for life. He's like a Supreme Court justice. You know what I mean? They're there for life, and you don't expect them to retire. You expect them. Because, look, there's supposed to be some sort of divine intervention in this process, supposedly, meaning that these cardinals were directed by a higher power on who to select, inspiration, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're saying, hey, the guy we picked retired because he can't cut it anymore?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just lock him in a room somewhere and just keep him away from public view?
No, I don't think so because you know what the thing is?
I mean, that's what they did with John Paul,
I made fun of this one time with you because it's one of my favorite New York Post headlines. When Yuri Andropov was the head of the Soviet Union, and he disappeared for like 6 months. And literally what the Russians at the time put out about him was he had a cold.
Right.
And he hadn't been seen for 6 months.
Right.
Then the next day he turned out dead. And they put that picture of him on the Post, and it said, Head red, dead.
You know, one of the greatest headlines ever.
The problem is, when you have no leadership, it causes a problem with everybody who's underneath all the, you know, like when Andropov wasn't there, there were no treaties, there were no talks, there was nothing going on, and the Soviet Union was like rudderless. So now you got a rudderless, leadership-less police state, time.
Right.
So I don't think that's actually a good strategy just to say, you know, we locked him in the attic because he's an embarrassment. Look, get them out of there and get somebody else in there. And in this case, be smart. If you really feel that this is the time for this kind of change, put in the black guy, put in the Asian guy, and put them in there and let them be Pope for the next 30 years.
Well, they have to realize that they're losing the faithful. I mean, the sexual scandal is huge.
Christianity, as a whole in Europe is dead.
I understand
really,
that.
Even the people who follow it.
Yeah.
The numbers are. I've seen the numbers from England to Greece to Poland to Norway to Spain.
Right.
The numbers of people who are really, whether they're Orthodox, Christian, Protestant, Catholic, doesn't even matter.
Right, right.
The numbers are down tremendously. I read this one thing and they just said, like, all these like beautiful churches like throughout Europe. Mm. Like, nobody goes to them.
Right.
Nobody's in. And like usually the masses are just like very old people just sitting in the first couple
right.
of rows.
Right.
Either because they're bored
right.
or they're feeling their mortality or something. Like even in our countries where once we came, like Italy and Greece, it's not as powerful as it used to be. It's
right.
just not.
Right.
And like even I was reading something the other day. They had something with the Italians. Like, half of them care who, like, the next pope.
Right.
I mean, again, like, half of them are like, yeah, yeah, come on.
Yeah. Like, it's also, I think, that the church has to respond to modern day, you know. I still think there people have some sort of spiritual need. You know, I think most people, even if they're atheists, maybe not religious, but they have some sort of need for spiritual something.
Oh, sure.
You know, and something like the Catholic Church could play a role in that if they got smart about it somehow.
They could.
You know, like trade in some of the formality for...
Yeah, but they won't do that.
Well, I understand that.
I've been hearing that since I was a kid.
No, I hear you.
They're not going to do it. Protestant countries are worse.
Okay.
The Orthodox, and I think the only country that was on that thing I read, the only that was still so much... Actually, was Russia.
Russia's huge.
Apparently, yeah. The Orthodox Russian is... still very powerful.
They're in with the government. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and well, a big shout out to the Pussy Riot.
But, of course, but, the Pussy Riot.
You know, and that's the funny thing, because it was part of an article I was reading how nationalistic Europeans are.
Right.
But religion, they don't care.
Right.
And then, like, in sharp contrast, the morons in the Middle East, they completely identify themselves by their religion.
Right.
And the same thing. They say, yeah, but like, who's Iranian? Who's Iraqi? Who's Jordan? Jordanian. Yeah, they don't give a shit.
They go
like,
by
nationality was like
secondary to religion.
Second
right.
to being Islamic. So.
Right, right. Oh, well, anyway, good luck on picking the next pope. We're waiting for some of that white puff of smoke to come out. You want to put some money
because
down?
Because that's what it means.
You want to bet?
You
want to take some action on the next pope?
What kind of odds am I getting? I'll pick a black guy.
I'll give you 3-1.
On what?
One of the two black guys versus anything else.
Okay, I'll take the black guy.
3-1.
3-1.
How much?
How much you want to lose,
go
bitch?
For? You want to go for C note?
A couple of C notes. Come on.
Let's go for what? Give me a number.
John.
Give me a number.
All right, 500 fuzzles.
Oh, okay, you got it.
And I get the black guy.
You're getting 3-1.
Okay, 3-1.
Two black guys or any black guy.
Any black guy
versus the field.
Plus is the rest of the.
Okay, I got the field, and you've got the heart eight.
I got the black guys in the field.
All right.
Because
moving
the
on.
White puff of smoke is
yes.
crucial.
Yes.
Because it's also supposed to be like a kind of celebration.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, they let black smoke out when they're still deliberating.
Right.
And then when
white
they finally,
smoke when it's...
When they finally figure right. it out, they get a white smoke thing. So that... Okay, cool. Going from popes to other dictators. Judah Lariam?
I was trying to do a white smoke joke lead into it.
Oh, okay.
But,
fair
but,
enough.
But the good news is that Ricky Ricardo in Venezuela has died.
Okay. I was going to say...
Loser.
I was going to say... Let me put up some music here to put us in the mood for this. What do you think of that, Gio Delarium? You like a little bit of that music?
Is that the Lucha Libre music?
I don't know. It all sounds the same to me.
It's good.
You like it?
Play it again.
All right. So it's going to keep playing as we talk. So anyway, so of course what we're talking about is Venezuelan strongman and dirty communist socialist
douche.
Hugo Chavez has finally kicked the bucket. Of course, dying from cancer at the age of 58, I believe.
56 or something.
Yeah, 58. Of course, the recipient of the best health care in the world, according to Michael Moore.
Yes.
The Cuban socialist medical system.
Yes, that's right. He actually went there for treatment.
Yes, several times.
And, of course, I have to believe that even though he considers himself a very nice born-again Christian type guy,
right.
I have to believe that George Bush is having a little laugh right
of
now.
Of course.
Because this asshole went to the UN in 2006, and he called him the devil.
Of course.
And he referred to Bush. He goes, I could still smell the sulfur. And like all these, like, dirty things. That he,
No.
You know
no,
what
no.
it is? The music
no, no.
inspired
yeah, okay, there you go.
What time is it? So, at any rate, and, you know, he said all those horrible things about
yeah.
Bush. So I hope that Bush is getting, like, a small
chuckle. I'm sure he's getting a chuckle out of it. Of course, Obama's probably shedding a tear, along with Sean Penn and Representative Jose Serrano
Danny
in the Bronx,
Glover.
Danny Glover,
Michael Moore,
Oliver Stone, all these, like, fucking douchebags.
Morons.
I don't understand... So first of all, when you look, let me ask you something. If this guy was such a great humanitarian, such a champion of the poor, Judah Lariam,
yeah.
How did he amass a personal fortune of $2 billion, with the letter B, billion, $2 billion?
Because that's what you
just do. Just from public service.
Right. Well, that's what you do when you care about the poor. Yeah.
Do you realize? That's the equivalent of, like, say, one of our congressmen going into Congress with a net worth of $50,000, spending 30 years there and walking away with $3 billion.
Yeah, that's insane.
And then saying, like, he did a good job for the poor. No, you assholes. He did a good job for his own pocket.
Right.
He's a fucking dictator, you cocksuckers. Why can't you figure that out?
He took control of the media down there. He took control of the papers.
No free speech. No political dissent.
No.
He tossed a few shekels towards the most poor to keep them in line.
They had show elections. Because
right.
He knew that guy who ran against him, Sopralis or whatever his name is,
yeah.
He knew he wasn't going to win.
Yeah, absolutely no real competition. No real free speech and the state-run media and everything. How? I don't know. Judah Lyram, it's one of the most frustrating things in the world. How do liberals like Sean Penn, Michael Moore, who make their living based on the ability to say whatever the fuck you want, thanks to the First Amendment of our glorious Constitution, yet they look at someone like Chavez, whose first act in power is to control the media, suppress free speech,
right. Control the economy,
nationalize the oil industry.
Right.
What the fuck?
And line his own pockets.
Yeah.
The other thing, which always drives me crazy,
right.
With them, they're always talking about the poor.
Yeah.
They want to be associated with Occupy Wall Street, like all these stupid things.
Right.
Meanwhile, they take full advantage of the capitalist system.
Sure.
You know how much money these guys have?
You're talking about
Michael
the celebrities.
Moore,
yeah.
Michael Moore has an apartment on the Upper West Side right here in New York that's like the size of Yankee Stadium.
Right.
And he's got, and I've seen it, let's hear it for Bill O'Reilly. He's got a house back in Michigan where he lives. Now he's always talking about being
right.
From Flint.
Right.
And that's where the auto industry
right.
And all that shit and Roger yeah. And me and all that. Meanwhile, he's got some crazy house out there that looks like
like
a Ewing's
mansion.
Ranch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. This fat bastard isn't suffering at all. He has nothing to do with the poor.
Yeah.
And the last time he even knew what that was like was before Roger and me came
right.
Out back in 89 or whatever, because he made a lot of money on that movie.
And the funny thing is, it's like, I don't understand how they're blind to the human rights abuses. That's the part that drives me crazy. Forget the politics. You know what I mean?
Well, they don't think it's true. Oh, they don't think it's true. They think it's U.S. propaganda. Sean Penn once said, he goes, the attacks on Hugo Chavez at one time after, because Dick Cheney said something
right.
One time back in like 2005 or something. He goes, the attacks on this man, he goes, they are lies, they're baseless, blah, 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 blah. He goes, the Bush administration, they're killing people in Iraq, and something like they're trying to distract
right.
You with Venezuela.
Right.
So, now, I mean, I never took Venezuela as a threat like militarily
or
anything like that, but. Their answer for this, by and large, is that this is just propaganda, and that he didn't do this, and that people who got arrested were criminals. Or
well, the vice president of Venezuela, I forget his name right now.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is, but he came out and said that the U.S. somehow gave Chavez the cancer.
Oh yeah,
that we figured out a way to give people cancer, and I'm saying to myself. You know, I wish we were as good as what they think we are.
I wish the CIA was really this cunning.
And this powerful.
And you do remember a few weeks ago, I made fun of Ahmadinejad in Iran.
Yes.
Because he feels now that the United States and the West can control the weather.
No, right.
And that was his answer for why they were having like really arid temperatures in like the southern Iran, and their agriculture was drying up.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
They're fucking morons. These are the leaders of companies, of countries.
Of countries. So, Hugo Chavez dead. I know you gave 3 cheers for that.
Oh, please.
And
you know what it is? Actually, you know what? I don't... I'm serious. I don't derive pleasure
right.
From his... Even when Bin Laden got killed.
Yeah.
It's just that, on the other hand, they are douchebags.
Right.
I mean, I'm convinced. Look, if I'm a victim of propaganda, fine. These guys are fucking assholes, and
right.
I'm not shedding a tear for them.
No,
I wouldn't say 3 cheers. I'm not sitting around, like, really smirking about it, but... You know,
you don't give a fuck.
Yeah, who gives a shit? I mean, these are bad guys,
right.
And I'm glad they're gone.
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein got hung, good.
Yeah.
You know, Chavez
right.
is dead, good.
Yeah.
Castro's not far behind, good.
How big a pain in our collective ass is the fact that Castro's still alive? How long have you and I said we're waiting for Castro to fucking die, the older Fidel? And this fucking guy is just hanging on like I don't even know how fucking old he is
but
now.
He's not even running anything now. He's
but
like
that's not the point. He should have been killed like 30 years ago. I'm still trying to figure out how he's... I mean, on some level, you have to admire him because, let's face it, we have been trying to kill him since like 1960, I think.
I mean, those they used to make jokes about like, well, they sent him like poisonous cigars, but they actually did.
And hookers with VD.
Yeah.
To give him syphilis so he could get some sort of horrible venereal disease. All these things.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm
Operation Mongoose. Wasn't that what was the code name to kill him? Operation Mongoose?
Yeah, I'm sure that they have, and I'm sure that they failed. And it is an amazing that he's been able to be a little a thorn in our side.
And he's outlived.
But that's about it.
Look at the president.
He's not more than a thorn.
Since he came to power and we made it a priority to get rid of him, look at the presidents he's outlasted.
Yeah.
Kennedy, Nixon, Johnson. Ford.
No.
So it's Kennedy.
No, it's Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon. Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush Sr., Clinton, Bush Jr.,
and Obama. And he's still going on.
And he's still alive. The only difference, though, he's really not running things anymore now.
Well, his brother is. Raul is. But
Raul's stepping down in 5 years. Did you see that? And he's handing it over to...
He probably found out he has 6 months to live. That's why he says he'll step down in 5 years.
No. He wants to get back to his job as a busboy.
But anyway, Hugo Chavez dead. The left in America mourns.
Yeah, and around the world, too.
Honestly mourns in America.
Yeah.
Drives me fucking nuts. Not because I'm upset that they don't have...
They're stupid.
It's not that
they're
think...
They're falling for this, like, that he cared about the poor.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Like, well, you know, you realize, like, even Castro, he's done two things. That they love to brag about. The socialized medicine, so everyone in Cuba has free medical coverage no matter what. It's
free,
covered.
Free shitty medical coverage.
Right, but here it is. But it's free. They're covered. They have the second highest rate of literacy in the world. I don't know who number one is. It's probably Uzbekistan
or
something.
Yeah, it's not us. Yeah.
But it's not us. Unfortunately, we're like 39th or something. But he's got that. He's got the literacy thing, and he's got the socialized medicine, and boom. Like, he did those, but... You know, the people who glorify him, they overlook I forget the guy's name, but there was a guy who was in jail down there for 22 years.
Right.
And he basically was in jail for 22 years because he wrote some poems or some articles criticizing Castro.
Right.
Like back in like 1970-something. Yeah. And they put him in jail for 22 years.
Right.
You know, could you imagine what would happen in this country if you put everybody in jail who made fun of the president? There'd be like four people walking the street.
Well, that's a good segue into what we have to talk about next. But, all right, so...
surgery?
Hugo Chavez... muerte.
He is no longer en fuego.
Well, maybe he is in hell.
Yes.
Oh, he's in fuego in hell. Good. You like that? How do you say hell in Spanish?
It's Mark Sanchez.
La hell.
I don't believe in hell, but I know what you mean.
You and I are just such Anglophiles. We don't give a fuck what something is in a different language. We don't care to learn.
No.
Fuck you. You learn what we're talking about.
No, I was actually in a meeting one time with my security guards, and I had to get some white trash idiot who insisting on like Mexico and Guatemala and Nicaragua, and he was like doing like all the pronunciations. Yeah. I said, "You're a fucking idiot." I just told him, I said, "Look, it's Mexico. It's got an accent. Shut up, Mexico." Drug cartel. Yeah,
there you go,
you Bolshevik ass eater. That's what Chavez was.
All right, enough on Chavez. All right, let's move on a little bit now. Let's talk about some other events that occurred here during the week. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, two nights ago, leading into this morning, the really remarkable grassroots efforts of Senator Rand Paul, a darling of the libertarian movement, with his 13-hour Senate filibuster, an old-school filibuster, Judolarium, the kind that personally I love to see in the Senate. It's everything that I love about a republic, you know, that... the minority party has a chance to object, and as long as you can talk and not have to leave the floor to take a piss or to take a shit or whatever, as long as you can stand at that podium, you have the right to talk as long as you want. And Rand Paul, he certainly did talk, Judolarium, and really what got him all fired up after the Chuck Hagel, let's put it this way, a lot of libertarians, a lot of conservatives really disappointed with people like Senator Rand Paul, who voted for Chuck Hagel.
Yeah.
And at the time, Rand Paul said, "Look, I don't agree with him. I don't necessarily hate him. I don't necessarily love him. But I do believe the president has the right to work with the people he wants to work with.
Right.
I don't know if everybody agrees with him or not, but at least it's a principled stand.
That's a principled stand. Also, he might have been looking at it, if we get rid of Hagel, you know, who's was a Republican, even though a moderate one.
Yeah.
He might be looking at it as, well, then he'll just go back to picking somebody he really wants, like a Democrat, like, who's like a real left-wing ding-dong, and then you'll really be stuck with some jerk-off.
So. But I think it was more of a principled decision on his part, to be honest with you. I think he just felt
I don't have a problem with that. I don't think you should be against nominees. He's just to be against nominees.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that. But when it came to this, to the nomination of Brennan for CIA chief, Rand Paul used it to highlight the problem that happened earlier in the week. Now, Judah Lariam, this is going to lead to a lot of different discussions, but it was centered around the fact that Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, refused to commit that it is illegal to kill Americans on American soil who have not been tried of any crimes using drone technology.
Right.
He refused to say that it was unconstitutional.
Right.
Probably on direct orders from Barack Obama.
More than likely.
So this caused Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, to go off on a filibuster.
Right.
Now, I was on Twitter the whole time the filibuster was going on, and the movement picked up steam. The Stand With Rand hashtag went viral. And I have to say, I applaud this, Judah Lariam. I know, and we'll get to the issue of the drones in a second, but when we talk about the filibuster itself, let me ask you this. What did you think about it?
My stand on it is, look, the concept of the government using drones or anything else for that matter to kill Americans.
Well, forget the actual, I didn't mean to interrupt you, forget the actual drone issue. I'm talking about the senatorial procedure of filibustering and to see it played out. Because a lot of our listeners, especially the younger ones, have never really seen a filibuster that lasted 13 hours.
Not since like the 80s.
Well, Strom Thurmond holds the record with that 22-hour, 24-hour, whatever it was, filibuster. And literally the filibuster by Rand Paul ended when he had to go to the bathroom.
Wow.
He had to get up and go to the John basically after 13 hours. But what do you feel about the process of filibustering? Do you think it's obstructionist? Do you think it because they're talking about revising the filibuster rules. Harry Reid wants to change the rules now. Tell me, what do you feel about the filibuster? Is there any thoughts around what happened with Rand Paul, just in terms of the filibuster? Forget the actual political issue behind it. We'll get to that in a second. But just the process.
Okay. On principle, I'm fine with it.
Okay.
And it, like you said, it gives the minority party a chance to have their voice and to, you know, and to bring up certain issues that might get quickly swept over by the majority who just want to get their way and get
which
something
Harry Reid attempted to do,
with,
by the way.
Which is what he's trying to do.
Right, by cloture.
So on principle, I'm fine with it. As far as being obstructionist, well, of course it is. It is by definition.
Right.
It's pretty much the only reason you're doing it is to be obstruction. I mean, that's part of it. Clearly.
You're making a point. That's all it is.
Yeah, but you're clearly doing the obstructionist part of it is clearly this is a big part of why you would do this.
Right.
Okay. But on principle, I'm fine with it. I'm not going to be. You know, the only thing though is you could say you're for it, but then the next thing that happens, if everybody did this like all the time, nothing would ever get done. And that's, you know, then it becomes counterproductive and kind of
but the truth of the matter is it doesn't happen all the time.
No, of course not. But so on principle, I'm fine with it.
Right.
And I know that probably for the rest of everybody else who has to listen, it's the most annoying, irritating thing in the world.
Right.
I mean, if I have to listen to somebody go on about something, I don't want to hear them talking about, even for like 2 minutes, I'm annoyed.
Right.
Imagine 13 hours. Now, I guess the rest of them can get up and leave.
They left. A lot of Democrats left.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of the Republicans never showed up.
Yeah. But I, on principle, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting to me, and maybe I'm thinking, I'm digging into this too much, Judah Lariam, but what's interesting to me is, let's go back to the time of Barry Goldwater when he ran for president.
My buddy.
Bear with me a little bit here.
I met him.
So did I. It's going to take me a while to get to that point I'm going to make. But in 1960, when the conservative movement started, and Goldwater took on the establishment of the GOP, which at the time was dominated by Northeastern Republicans like Nelson Rockefeller. And, you know, it was a very moderate type of Republican party.
Yeah.
Like today's equivalent might be a party full of McCains, for example.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that Barry Goldwater began with this ideological purity to take over the Republican Party. And in 1964, he won the nomination. And as we all know, he got crushed by Lyndon Johnson because basically people were voting for dead John Kennedy,
But it was a different era.
No, but I mean, I agree, but it was
Bill Moyers did a number on him, and like there were a lot of other...
There was a lot going on. You're absolutely right. And it was one of the worst defeats. Like, the only other president who got beat as bad was Mondale when he ran against Reagan.
Yeah.
49-1.
Right.
49 states to one. But what's interesting is everybody from that period of time, 1960 to 1964, credit Barry Goldwater fighting the good fight on an ideological basis as being the reason that Reagan got elected governor of California on a conservative platform and then later became president of the United States. Right. Everyone, including Reagan, said, I owe this to Barry Goldwater.
Absolutely.
Okay?
That's the truth.
Let me ask you this. The filibuster by Senator Rand really wasn't supported by the Republican leadership. Mitch McConnell, McCain,
that guy Cantor
in the Senate. Cantor's in the House. Cantor's in the House.
Yeah, but he's a leader. I mean,
yeah, but
did
I mean,
he have anything to say
I don't
about
think
it?
He had anything to say about it. Right. But in the Senate, especially McConnell,
right, Senate,
McCain, half those guys were having dinner during that filibuster with Obama.
Lindsey Graham.
They were all having dinner with Obama. So anyway, my point being here. However, when Rand Paul started his filibuster arguing for the sovereign individual rights of every American citizen, he was joined by some of the Young Turks of the party. Marco Rubio, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're the ones who helped them keep going because he would yield the floor to his Republican colleagues. There was also one Democratic senator. I can't remember his name right now, but, you know, give him big ups for having the political courage to join the filibuster on principle against drone strikes. But do you think possibly, this might be the beginning of another conservative/libertarian takeover of the Republican Party? Will 20 years from now, will we look back at Rand Paul, in essence, standing up to his own moderate leadership? Because, listen...
Could be.
If you follow on Twitter right now, there's a very sharp division. There's the Young Turks, where all the young people are energized, much like the Goldwater girls back in the 60s, right?
Hillary.
Hillary was one of them. But the Goldwater girls, and when you had that sort of youthful, even for Obama, when you had the college kids rise up for Obama.
Sure.
Is it possible right now that Rand Paul somehow works his way into the conversation in 2016 based on this? Either for president or vice president.
Or just becomes a power broker.
And then influences the party direction. Sure. Because now, don't forget, he's also got Cruz. He's got Rubio. He's got Lee. He's got these guys all working together with him now, working off conservative/libertarian principles.
Yeah, but he's really a libertarian, though.
No, I understand. He's a libertarian. And he's got a couple of other libertarians, but he's also got more hardline conservatives. Certainly not moderates. Certainly not people who think the party has to move to the center, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, right. Okay.
And isn't it interesting that Mitch McConnell came up to support his fellow Kentucky senator, the senior senator from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell, came out to support the junior senator, Rand Paul, at midnight, 1 a.m. After he was able to survey 6-7 hours of the filibuster, saw that it was gaining popularity in Twitter, saw that a Democrat ran in, and then he ran in and said, let me help my young colleague from the great state of Kentucky.
Yeah, that's why he's a
politician. How about you go fuck yourself at that point?
That's why he's a politician.
But that's what I'm trying to get at.
I can't stand that. Mm.
Is it possible, in your opinion, and we're just talking here because there's no real fact to this, is it possible that we, 20 years from now, if you and I are still alive, we'll say, that's another Goldwater moment?
It could be. Yeah, the only problem that Rand Paul is going to have is he's made a few comments over the past couple of years that got him into a little trouble. And this is such a media era with the internet and like all shit that like Barry Goldwater would never have had to put up with.
Right.
You know, so unfortunately, they can see every pimple you've ever had.
That's okay. But Barack Obama got elected after smoking pot and shit like that,
sniffing coke. Yeah, all right. But could this be a watershed moment that
philosophically
really, it could be.
Yeah,
it could be. In fact, I see exactly where you're going with it.
Yeah.
And every movement needs that moment.
That one spot in history, that one point in history.
But you have to have something that becomes the turning point. Like a lot of people frustrated with Obama, they don't like a lot of stuff. And here's this guy, really a libertarian on principle. I mean, that's why I like him.
But not as harsh as his dad. So Ron Paul is a hardcore libertarian who's like, I mean, Rand Paul has already started to like work a little bit within the system. So, for example, voting for Hegel, right? His father would never vote for Hegel. I can almost guarantee you Ron Paul would never vote for Hegel. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if...
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. They somebody once made a joke about Ron Paul. They said, you know, when they asked the presidential candidates, like, if you were a tree, what would you be?
Yeah.
They once said, they asked all the candidates who were running in the field, if you were a superhero, who would you be?
Right.
And they said, well, Ron Paul couldn't be one because his powers aren't enumerated in the Constitution.
There you go.
So he's a real believer.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I respect Ron Paul's principled stand.
Yes,
but his son, I think, has gotten the best qualities of his dad while at the same time being more pragmatic. More practical being
but,
a senator.
Well, he's modern.
And it's more modern.
He's modern. He's a man of his times. Like
right.
Ron Paul, he represents the
old school
age that he came from. He's from Texas or whatever.
I really
it could be. It could be that kind of moment.
I really hope that in 2016, there is a conservative faction, whether it's the Tea Party, whether it's the Libertarian Party, that really pushes the Republican Party
have a problem,
and drags it back to the right side, because whether it's Rand Paul, Rubio, because people are talking up Rubio because he's Hispanic, he could bring in the Hispanic vote to the party and things like that. He's probably a little bit more religious, and he can talk to people on that level.
Actually, I think he's very Catholic.
Right. But my point is maybe he's a better candidate. Do you know, if you were just talking about someone to run?
See, that's just the thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not dumping on religious people, but Goldwater didn't have to put up with that.
No,
even Reagan didn't have to.
No.
A lot of that was post their... You know, guys like Goldwater and Reagan couldn't get the nomination in today's party. I mean, you know, they want people like Bush. They want people like Bachman.
Right.
They want the people like Santorum.
Right.
And, you know, you got these guys like, Rand. I don't know, you know, if he fits that mold. And I think you're going to have a very serious division.
But you may have to have that butting of heads. And that's what I'm saying by what you call the watershed moment.
Yeah.
That this is the type of thing that drives people to say, listen, unless we want to see more Obamas, unless we want Hillary in 2016.
Right, we got to get together.
We got to get together and decide what's more important.
Winning
and being free from government tyranny, or insisting that we exclude gays, put our moral beliefs on everybody else in the country. Because again, the libertarians, in theory, should protect your religious rights.
Oh, they will.
Do you understand what I'm saying? They won't promote your religious rights,
right?
But they'll protect them.
They'll protect. Well, that's what the government should do.
And really, if you give the choice, if you give the choice to the religious people of saying you could either go libertarian, well, we'll guarantee you could still worship, versus the Obamas and the Hillarys of the world, who are more than happy to say, You as a religion cannot do this. You have to support abortion. You have to fund Obamacare and have it really infringe on your religious freedom.
Yeah.
Which way are they going to go? They're not going to stay home. That's my point. They're not going to stay home.
Yeah, but they're too powerful now that they don't have to give in. And they can insist on guys like Huckabee and people like that, that, you know, he's even gone the extra mile being a pastor in his life. Yeah, they want that type of person because they associate a person like that with having the strong moral compass and the belief in Jesus.
Right.
And then, like, to them, well, that's, he'll be fine. He'll always make the right decision.
I don't disagree with you, but at the same time,
evangelicals and these people, they've got too much to say about it. I don't know that they'll go a long way, because you have to remember, a real libertarian is going to always look out for the rights of the individual.
Right.
Not the group.
Right.
Not
right.
the state.
I agree.
Not the principality. You name it. That's not what we're about. It's about, you want to have a gun, you have a gun.
Well, that's
you want to have an abortion.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is, if we look at Rand Paul as being perhaps his filibuster being this watershed moment in history, maybe it's not that Rand Paul gets elected. It's maybe that he drags enough people to the right where Rubio gets elected.
That's what I thought we were talking about all along. Rand Paul's not getting elected president.
Right.
But
right.
But you know what? He could position himself where he could be a very significant power player.
Absolutely.
Like Pat Buchanan was in 92.
Right.
Like
right.
that kind of voice for people like me who left the Republican Party years ago because I don't feel that they speak for me.
But if you knew that Rand Paul was somehow involved in either writing the Republican plank or supporting a Republican candidate wholeheartedly.
Right.
You would probably jump back into the Republican Party because you would have a better chance of electing a candidate that way.
Well, possibly. I mean, at this point, I don't think I'm going to bother changing my
No, but you might vote Republican, is what I'm saying.
Yes, yes. Not like this past one that Romney, like, I didn't despise him, but I was like, and
I
so what? And well, I know you did. But I just thought he was like milquetoast. But I mean, as it is, I was able to do that right here in Brooklyn. I went in, I voted for Gary Johnson. There weren't many of us, but...
Right. But that's my whole point, right? Yeah. The Gary Johnsons, the Ross Perots, if that's what floats your boat, these are truly fringe candidates. And I understand the Libertarian Party on principle I can get behind. But right now, talk about radical almost ideology, this whole anything goes, do whatever you want, is still too radical for people. I think if you were to somehow temper it, maybe put across...
But you have to say to yourself, why is it radical to people? It is because they've become so used to the government.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Both parties,
I agree.
And I've told you this a million times, both parties for like the past 20 or 30 years,
right,
they're both into telling you what to do business.
Absolutely.
So you can't marry a guy, you can't have an abortion because we don't like you.
Right.
You can't own a gun. You're seeing that like crazy. We don't like you. You have to wear a seatbelt.
Right.
You can't drink something more than 20 fluid ounces.
Sodas,
You can't drive more than 55 miles an hour.
Right.
It is an endless list of what the government is telling you.
You can't or cannot
do, and it's usually cannot.
Right.
Now, how can you claim that you live in a free country if you're not free to make these decisions?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to be 50 in June. I like to think I can handle these things on my own. Do I know that people are going to make stupid decisions? Sure. Do I know that if you legalize, like I talk about legalizing drugs, some morons are going to take an overdose? That's the way it goes. That's the choice you made, live with it.
But they're doing it now.
Exactly. Well, I know that. But the point is, do I know that if you just really let people just go on their own, are there going to be some stupid shit? Of course, but there already is.
Right.
So, you know what? What drives me crazy is this is not the function of government to be telling me these things. And the reason I can't get on, and the reason I left the Republican Party, I can't get on with the religious people, is because they're one of those people.
Of course.
If you're gay, they don't want you marrying a gay person. They don't want you having an abortion. They don't want money for embryonic stem cell research.
Right.
Which, I mean, of all the things that government wastes money on, let them spend. You might actually find something.
Right.
You know, I mean, look, even if you found nothing, you give it a shot. You're not supposed to be against knowledge and learning, which is a negative for them.
Absolutely.
You know, then you have the combined, which we always talk about. You have a group of people who think the world is like 6,000 years
old. Right.
You know, one day we have to broadcast our show from the Creation Museum in Kentucky. How
we should
funny
go there.
Would that be?
That would be awesome.
How fucking funny would
that be?
That
would be awesome. And talking to yokels.
Not only could I talk to them about Jesus,
right?
I'll show them my fucking surgery. I'll show them.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that would be a great trip if we could ever swing it.
I'm like,
pack the portable studio, head out to Kentucky, and just talk to those Phil, can we do it? He's shaking his head. He's shrugging his shoulders. What the fuck does that mean?
Now he's putting his thumb up. Asshole. Put him back up your ass. I'm telling you, the Creation Museum in Kentucky, it's run by this Australian crazy religious guy named Ham.
Okay.
And he's an idiot. I mean, he's just a complete idiot. When you walk in, can we talk about this for a minute?
Yeah, go ahead.
You walk in, you see like a stegosaurus, but it has a saddle on it. And, you know, Bill Maher, who made the movie Religulous, he stole a joke from me that I've used my entire life. He's
What's
like,
that?
Because the guy's telling him, no, this is real. People wrote this thing. He goes, like the Flintstones? I've been using that joke for decades. I mean,
I told you, like...
Do you really think people like hopped on a pterodactyl and like flew across a canyon? I mean, these people are idiots.
Listen, for the life of me, I still don't understand why evolution and religion, in their opinion, have to be mutually exclusive.
Right. Why can't they be hand-in-hand?
I've said it over and over again. I have a degree in evolutionary biology. You know who taught it to me? Jesuit priests.
Yeah.
In university.
Yeah, that's not surprising, though, because Catholic Jesuit priests are not born-again fundamentalists who think the Bible, that somebody lived inside a fish for 3 days, and all these other, and some old Jew floated around with two of every animal. They don't really think that. I used to ask them that when I went to Catholic, they went, no, it's just a story.
Come on.
Be serious. I saw this guy Ham in an interview.
That?
And Keith Ham, whatever his name is, and all these things in the Bible, absolutely true.
Yes, literal.
All of them.
Literal.
These are real things. Like, there was Hitler. There was Napoleon. There was the Renaissance. There's the Stegosaurus with the saddle. You had to listen to this moron. He goes, everything in Genesis is like absolute history.
It's literal truth. Yes. Yeah. They don't take it as any sort of allegory or anything.
And if you've never seen, if you're too young, the best movie on this, of course, about the Scopes Monkey Trial is Inherit the Wind.
Oh, Inherit the Wind.
With,
awesome.
With Spencer Tracy, Frederick Mark, the guy who wound up being one of the husbands on Bewitched. Right. His name, Dick York.
Dick
whatever
York
his name
or whatever,
is.
Yeah.
And Gene Kelly. And it's just
awesome.
Awesome. This is the best movie. And there's this scene where he's questioning, Frederick March plays the religious guy, and Spencer Tracy's questioning him, and he goes, you see this rock? He goes, Professor Olerton over there gave it to me. He goes, it's like 2 million years old. He goes, your professor's got his dates mixed up. That rock's not more than 6,000 years old. He goes, how do you know that? He goes, a fine biblical scholar named Bishop Usher figured out that the creation started 6,000 years ago at 9 a.m. Eastern. And Spencer Tracy's looking. He goes, 9 o'clock? He goes, Eastern Standard Time?
Yeah.
Or Rocky Mountain Time? Well, and he starts asking him, and the guy goes, oh, don't be silly. He goes, have you ever even thought about this? Because the God didn't create the sun till the fourth day. And he goes, that's right. He goes, well, the first day, what was it like? He goes, was it a normal day, a 24-hour day? And the guy goes, well, it says a day. He goes, yeah, but there was no sun.
Well, it's one of those things, you know. I mean, the literal interpretation of the Bible, again, I hate to be this blunt, it's for idiots. Even if you're religious.
Crazy.
Yeah, even if you're religious.
I mean, it puts you in the neighborhood with the people like the Taliban.
Right.
Except that you're not violent.
Basically.
They take the Quran, they twist it, and they believe this is it. This is, you know, if you think all the answers to life are in one book, you're out of your mind. go read another book.
Right. But anyway, so... That is interesting. And yeah, man, I wish we could broadcast out of that creationist museum.
It'd be a fucking gas. The only problem is, literally, it's like in the middle of nowhere. Lexington or like some, no, not down that part of the country, but if you flew into like Lexington, we'd have to drive something like 60 miles.
Ouch.
Yeah. So I think the thing is, maybe we'll get a bus.
A tour bus?
Yes. And we'll paint Elvis on the side so they won't shoot us. And Jesus. And just like,
well, actually,
and we'll have like two of them doing like, don't be cruel.
Well, I was going to say, actually, this is where the name of our show actually would play well. Like, as soon as they saw White Riot Show, they'd probably be like, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, boy.
White Riot Show on one side of the bus. Then on the other side, just a picture of Jesus.
They'll Jesus.
Follow us.
I heart Jesus. We'd have acolytes following us through Kentucky,
maybe
Mississippi,
a noose.
Missouri.
A noose would be good.
Oh, come on, let's not.
Oh, that's nice. I meant for a tie.
Oh, man. Yeah, that'd be awesome. I think that would be great.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah.
But listen, before we go, we're on the end of the show. You have to give me a couple of minutes to rant on something, Judah O'Leary. And we keep mentioning it. It seems to be a joke. Next week, we have going into effect the rules imposed by his Lord Emperor, Queen Midget Bloomberg, about the soda bans in New York City. Now, so we call it a soda ban, but in actuality, it's a ban on any sugary drinks over 16 ounces.
I thought it was 20.
I thought so too. I read the newspaper today again. It was 16 ounces, 1/6. Judah O'Leary, you know, Big Fat John, among his various monetary investments, has invested in a small eatery. You know which one I'm talking about. And the hoops we have to jump through to comply to this fucking new law of Bloomberg's.
I'll be
blunt. Big Fat John has bought into a pizzeria, some of the best pizza. Until I sign the paperwork, I'm not going to mention the name. But the truth of the matter is, I'm in there already helping the guy out, prepare, get ready. It's ridiculous the hoops you have to jump. First of all, we got to get rid of all the cups that are over 16 ounces. Because if an inspector comes in and sees somebody drinking a Coke out of a big cup, whether you filled it or not, you get a fine.
Wow.
You know, if someone orders a pie and says, can you send over a 2-liter Coke? The answer is no, you can't.
Wow.
I can send you 4 16-ounce bottles of Coke, which of course cost a lot more. And not only that, they take anything. So for example, Dunkin' Donuts in New York City will now refuse to put sugar in a large coffee for you. Or they have to, like, you know, they've refused to put anything in. Starbucks says they will put in anywhere from 3 to 5 packets depending on the size of the thing so they don't run afoul of the law. But then the law also says that if it's a diet soda, you could drink as much as you fucking want. This is one of the most ridiculous rules on the face of the planet.
This is so stupid.
And as a father, some people may know this already. My son is autistic. And one of his great joys in life when he finishes something successfully is he goes across the street to our local Dunkin' Donuts and he orders himself a large coffee culotta.
Okay.
Now, Judah Olarium, you've seen my kid.
Yes.
He's not obese.
No.
He's cut like a Greek god.
Yes.
15 years old, bigger than his old man, and much handsomer, and not an ounce of fat on him.
Well, that goes without saying.
Right. Now, under the law, he cannot go and order the thing that makes him so happy in life right now.
Right.
Why the fuck is Mayor Bloomberg telling me how to best raise my child?
Yeah.
How to best control my dietary intake? How to best control my obesity? This is the nanny state gone wild.
Yeah.
And what's worse is this billionaire fuck is now trying to export it to all of New York State because, for whatever reason, Andrew Cuomo has a little bit of balls on him and said, this is not going to be a statewide ban. Fuck you. You do it in your city, but we're not going to do it in the state.
Right. No.
And now Bloomberg is trying to, you know, use his billions to influence having the state of New York adopt this. Yeah. And his foundation is already trying to export it to the rest of the country.
And I can tell you right now, it's going to really ramp up now because he's out in November.
Yeah.
Yeah, the election's coming up.
That's right. He won't be restricted at all.
You have to realize, no, but in other words, he's trying to do as much crazy shit as he can before he leaves.
Right.
Because he's in legacy mode. And that there's nothing worse than a douche politician in legacy mode.
I agree with you.
Yeah, because look, at this point, what's he going to be remembered for? Even though he's...
What's he going to be remembered for? A lot of things that I probably shouldn't say or else get sued by him, probably.
But the point is, really, what's outstanding about him right now?
Nothing.
He didn't reduce crime like Giuliani did. He didn't bring business back like Giuliani did.
Well, he'll claim that he did.
Yeah, but you don't get remembered for that. Every mayor.
You know what he's
going to
be remembered for?
Dinkins thinks he did a good job.
He's going to be remembered for buying a third term and buying his way around term limits. That's what he's going to be remembered for.
But that's not a good legacy.
No, it's horrible.
That's a negative legacy. But the point is he's doing all this shit because he thinks he's visionary.
Right.
He thinks he's ahead of the curve.
Right.
He thinks if I'm the first to do it and then it sweeps the nation, everyone's going to remember
me.
Bloomberg in New York and his nose went out of his way to like really get after this. That's what he's going to be known
for.
This
is fucking disgusting.
No, it's stupid.
You know how much I hate anyone who tells me how to raise my kid. In general, I hate it.
But it's everything. It's
right.
Closing down Times Square so you can just walk
for
in the middle of the street.
Yeah. So let me. So he's built all these for people who don't live in New York City. He's taken possibly one of the busiest cities on the planet in terms of traffic. 9 million people, and he's decided to build bike paths and put up greenways in the middle of the busiest piece of real estate on the planet, Times Square. Even here in Brooklyn, Judah Lariam, if I look outside our studio,
see
bike paths. There's cars congested for miles, but we've carved out space for fucking hippies to ride their bikes on. And I don't care if somebody wants to ride a bike, they should have the right to do it. But why are they clogging up traffic?
Yeah.
And furthermore, why am I paying for a license and a registration to drive my car because I use the road, but a bicyclist doesn't have to?
No.
A bicyclist doesn't have to get a license. A bicyclist doesn't pay a registration fee. Where the fuck are their contributions?
They don't have to park.
They don't have to, right?
They rarely have to worry about it.
They don't get tickets the way I do.
They don't have to worry about it getting stolen, by and large.
Yeah.
You know, they...
Fuck them.
People have to put alarms in their cars. They have to do it.
Yeah, fuck them in the mouth. All bike riders, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. The only thing which bother me so much is some of the bikes they have over here... They're like part of parks, and it has really no effect.
If you're in a park, I don't care about that.
If you're doing that, give them a lane.
Yeah.
But when you start taking away lanes from cars and buses and things that are important.
Yeah, and if you don't live in a crowded city, unless you're from Chicago or Boston, perhaps, or L.A. or something, if you're listening to Big Fat John and Judah Lariam on the White Riot Show, I don't think you appreciate that when two cars are on a single street in New York are heading towards each other in opposite directions, there's maybe like 3 inches on either side of the car that's available for maneuvering.
Yeah.
And right now, you've got, what is it, would you say about a 6 or 8 inch wide bike lane on each side of the road?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's taking away valuable real estate.
Also, it's dangerous.
And it's dangerous for the bike riders.
Well,
I've got into fist fights with bike riders ever since this shit happened.
They can easily lose control. And
they come out of nowhere because it's not like they obey traffic signals. That's the other thing these fucks don't do. If it's a red light, they just zoom right through it or they feel like it doesn't apply to them.
Yeah.
Why aren't the cops giving them tickets?
I always call them the bike Nazis because...
Yes.
Because I walk across the Brooklyn Bridge a lot for exercise.
Right.
And all these fucking assholes do is zoom across. They're not looking at scenery.
Yeah.
They're not looking at anything. And all they do is, you know, when you're walking across the bridge, there's just one big lane.
Right.
Okay. Half of it is for walking.
Right.
Half of it is for bikes. But none of the tourists know that.
Right.
So they constantly are walking over to the bike side.
Right.
But the bike riders are such jerk-offs. All they do is yell and scream at these people. And I curse at them. And I'm like, these people are tourists. They're coming here. They're putting money in your city. And you're, you know, and it annoys me because the Manhattan Bridge is like four blocks north of it.
Right.
Nobody uses this fucking bridge. And it's got two lanes. It's got one on each side. Now, granted, I've walked across. It's desolate. It looks like something from Escape from New York.
Right.
But quite honestly, the bike riders should be over there.
Right.
Because the Brooklyn Bridge has an attraction to it.
Well, it's a landmark. And it's got a tradition and everything.
Literally, the Manhattan Bridge is like a desolate, unused. I mean, some people use it, but nothing like the Brooklyn Bridge. And we don't need these people walking across, screaming at tourists, cursing at them. They're assholes.
Yeah. It's horrible.
And Bloomberg's favoring them.
Of course. Of course, because it's all green. There's no gas emissions or anything. Fuck Bloomberg in the mouth. I really cannot. I don't mind people who have policies that I disagree with when it comes to whatever it is, war, peace, investment,
it's
whatever.
To be expected.
That's to be expected. The one thing that drives me up is someone telling me that I can't figure something out for myself. The assumption.
Well, that's what I said before.
Yeah, that because I'm not in office.
I can figure these things out.
That's the part that drives me up a wall. Are you trying to tell me that you think the majority of the population of New York City can't figure out that drinking a 32-ounce Coke is bad for you or won't make you fat or you shouldn't drink it if you're a diabetic? But what if that's my choice, you dumb fuck?
Yeah.
You want to do a favor for me? Fine. If I call up City Hall, I could ask for this information. They could give it to me. They could go on the air and put up commercials saying soda's bad for you. Fine.
If they want to help me out, look, I don't smoke. I don't drink.
Yeah.
I don't ride bicycles. I don't curse at tourists. Give me a tax break, you motherfucker.
Yeah, if that's what you're going to do.
Like Larry Allen.
This is horrible. This is horrible.
Yeah, that's horrible.
And not to mention all the businesses that have to comply with this bullshit.
Oh, please.
It's going to cost small businesses revenue. They're going to have to spend time converting shit. They're not going to get compensated for it.
I forgot that this was happening right
now. Yeah, this is horrible.
It's irritating my hemorrhoid.
Like, how many times do you order raw food and you'll say, and give me a bottle of Coke with that?
Yeah, sure.
Now they can't do it unless it's either a 16-ounce bottle or a 12-ounce can.
Terrible.
Isn't it horrible?
Yeah.
Fuck those. Fuck Bloomberg. Can we make a rap song out of that?
Was that you or was that like you skipped the recording?
I think I skipped the recording.
Was that you?
I said fuck like 20 times and I could not say Bloomberg afterwards. There was somebody that was like,
How about Mayor Buttmunch?
He's a horrible person.
All right.
He's a horrible person. But anyway, Judah Lariam, enough getting angry over Bloomberg. Let's give a quick pimp before we go. Everyone, go to WhiteRiotShow.com, or you can check us out on iTunes or Stitcher. Look for White Riot Show. Go to YouTube.com/WhiteRiotShow, Facebook.com/WhiteRiotShow, and, of course, Twitter.com/WhiteRiotShow, and the newest addition to the White Riot Show Network, Player.fm. Until next week, this is Big Fat John.
And Judah Lariam.
Peace.
Join us every week at www.whiteriotshow.com to follow the latest exploits of Big Fat John and Judo Larry M. This is Mark, the man with the golden voice, and I'm not wearing any pants.